Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. College graduation season is upon us, and with it comes a flood of commencement speeches, ranging from funny, insightful, boring, and everything in between. Today, what makes a great commencement speech? We want to hear from you. Do you remember your graduation speech? What's your favorite commencement speech of all time, or your least favorite? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Commencement speeches are sometimes delivered by actors, business leaders, presidents, and comedians. Here's a brief sampling.
Thank you, President Cowan, Mrs. President Cowan. Distinguished guest, undistinguished guest, you know who you are.
If you Honored have been touched and, creepy Spanish by the success fairy, people think you know why. It's true. People think success breeds enlightenment, and you are duty-bound to spread it around like manure, really.
Right now, the new is you. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life.
Because all it takes is one act of service, one blow against injustice, to send forth what Robert Kennedy called that tiny ripple of hope.
And this leads me to a question that just isn't asked enough at commencements. Why are you leaving here? This seems like a very nice place. They have a lovely website. Besides, have you seen the world outside lately? They are playing for keeps out there, folks.
Some examples there of commencement speeches ending with Stephen Colbert, who spoke at Knox College in 2006. We also heard Ellen DeGeneres in 2009 at Tulane, Meryl Streep at Barnard College in 2010, Steve Jobs at Stanford in 2005, and President Obama at Wesleyan University in 2008. And joining us now is Ted Widmer. He's a historian and writer. He was a speechwriter in the Clinton White House from 1997 to 2001. He also edited the Library of America's American Speeches. Ted, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Anthony.
Yeah, it's really nice to have you. And with us as well is Ellen Fitzpatrick. She's a professor of history at the University of New Hampshire. She's author of The Highest Glass Ceiling, Women's Quest for the American Presidency. Ellen, welcome back to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Very good to be here, Anthony.
And listeners, we want to get you in on this conversation. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. So, Ted, I'll start with you. What do you think makes a great commencement speech?
Well, it's a very difficult balancing act. You want to avoid cliches while saying all the cliched things that people expect to hear, that a liberal arts education is valuable out there, that they will lead lives of service and purpose, and that their families love them and are part of it. Not all those things are true, but that's what everyone expects to hear.
Right. Ellen, what about you? What makes a good commencement speech?
It needs to be short.
And
yeah, it
right.
needs, I think that the best that I have heard have mixed wisdom and humor. And the graduates are excited and full of emotion, as are their families. And they're excited to see the famous person who's been invited. Just seeing the person is its own thrill. And oftentimes, when people are able in that position to be a little self-deprecating, it endears them to their audience.
So let's listen to an example. You both chose J.K. Rowling's speech as mm-hmm. one of your favorites. So let's listen to a little bit of J.K. Rowling. She spoke at Harvard University in 2008. So let's listen to a little bit of that, and then we'll talk about why you liked it so much.
Many prefer not to exercise their imaginations at all. They choose to remain comfortably within the bounds of their own experience, never troubling to wonder how it would feel to have been born other than they are. They can refuse to hear screams or peer inside cages. They can close their minds and hearts to any suffering that does not touch them personally. They can refuse to know. I might be tempted to envy people who can live that way, except that I do not think they have any fewer nightmares than I do.
So that's author J.K. Rowling. She was speaking at Harvard University in 2008. Ted, what did you like about that speech so much?
Well, that speech went all over the internet immediately, and it was a huge success and became a book. But part of it was the surprise that Harvard had invited J.K. Rowling. I mean, it was already a success before she began to speak. Harvard literary departments usually specialize in obscure authors who do not achieve that kind of success. So she was an unusual type of literary personality, but also she just spoke so well about failure. It took her a long time to figure out her voice, and she really suffered in a lot of ways, and she talked about that, and that's an incredibly heartening message when you're hearing from someone who's obviously succeeded so well.
Right. And Ellen, what struck you about Rowling's speech?
Well, it, as Ted said, it was the incredible contrast between one of the most fabulously successful commercial novelists of our time and a speech that focused in the first half on failure and poverty. And she had a line in there where she said, you know, people talk about poverty being ennobling. It isn't. She talked about coming from a very poor family, her own struggles, and a job that she had as she was trying to make her way in the world, working for Amnesty International in London, where she opened mail and read the accounts of torture victims. And the second part of the speech was about imagination and having the capacity to empathize with other human beings. And that, I think the combination of those two things was just really extraordinarily powerful. And of course, her audience was full of young people who were familiar with the Harry Potter books and her amazing success. So the contrast and the inherent power of her message was really, really remarkable.
Let's take a couple of callers. You can join this conversation. What's your favorite commencement speech or what's your least favorite? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. Jessica is calling from Auburn, Massachusetts. Hi, Jessica. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. So I'm a recent graduate of UMass Amherst. I graduated in May 2017, and we actually had Elizabeth Warren as our commencement speaker, and she was just really not too political and very empowering, and it was just a great speech to listen to.
But not political, you say. So the message wasn't overtly political, but you felt like she was talking to you.
Right. She said in her speech that she didn't want to be too political, and she was really speaking to everyone and saying, no matter what your beliefs are, go out, make a difference, stand up for what you believe in.
All right, Jessica, well, thanks so much. We appreciate that. So a vote there for Elizabeth Warren's commencement speech at UMass Amherst. Let's go to Alex, who's calling from Hoboken, New Jersey. Hi, Alex, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, thanks. So I'm about to be graduating in just a couple days as a college senior here in Hoboken, and that ceremony is scheduled to be about 5 to 6 hours long, and I believe that a really good category for a commencement speaker is briefness.
Briefest,
and,
right.
I'll end it there with my own advice.
Okay, Alex, thanks a lot. Ellen, there's Alex reading from your list of recommendations, I think.
Yes, no one ever says, I just wish the commencement speech had been longer.
Yeah. I want to play another example. Ted, one of your favorites, another one of your favorites, John F. Kennedy's speech to American University in 1963. So let's listen to this. This is President John F. Kennedy. In the speech, he was talking about, it was really an announcement that he, the Soviet Union, and Britain were agreeing to discuss a comprehensive nuclear test ban treaty. Here's a little bit of what he said.
World peace, like community peace, does not require that each man love his neighbor. It requires only that they live together in mutual tolerance, submitting their disputes to a just and peaceful settlement. And history teaches us that enmities between nations, as between individuals, do not last forever, however fixed our likes and dislikes may seem.
All right. President John F. Kennedy at American University in 1963. Ted, it's interesting. I've spoken to you in the past about JFK's speeches. What did you like about that one?
I think it's the best speech he ever gave, and he reversed himself on a lot of his earlier positions. Ellen knows the speech well, too. And that's what makes it so powerful. He'd been a real cold warrior, we'll bear any burden to defend ourselves, he said in his inaugural. He'd been sobered by the Cuban Missile Crisis experience, and he's coming at the world picture in a very new way, saying we can look at things from the Russian point of view. We'd like to re-examine our former attitudes. He uses that phrase, and it's really moving to hear a politician and a president specifically saying, I can learn a little more, that I can do better. And, I, you know, in the current political environment we're in especially, it's nice to hear someone trying to see things from the other perspective.
Mm. And Ellen, I'm wondering if what Ted was talking about, the idea that, you know, the most powerful man in the world, I can learn something and here's evidence of it, if that makes for a strong commencement speech versus just a purely political speech. Ellen, do we still have you? Did we lose Ellen Fitzpatrick? I guess we lose Ellen. Nope, yeah, we apparently lost Ellen. We'll ask you the same question, Ted. I mean, you know, what makes a strong commencement speech versus a strong political speech, I guess, is where
I
was going with it.
I agreed with the caller from UMass Amherst that you don't really want hard politics in your commencement speech. It's a family day. It's almost like going to church. You're thinking about higher values, the meaning of your whole life. It's a real landmark in your life. So you don't want to be told that you have to vote a certain way, and there are Republicans and Democrats and everybody is in the audience. But we want our political leaders also to give us other forms of guidance. We want them to inspire us in a lot of different ways. And so it's a chance for a politician to show some new chops. And it sounds like that's what Elizabeth Warren did that day. And
yeah.
Kennedy was good at it. He spoke on a few college campuses during his short presidency, and he was funny and pointed and smart. And he did well on college campuses.
Ellen, I think we have you back. Yes. And we were talking about JFK's speech in 1963 at American University,
yes.
Which Ted characterized as really one of Kennedy's best speeches ever. What did you make of that speech?
I agree. It's an extraordinary speech. And like George Marshall, who was Secretary of State, his speech in 1947 at Harvard, it was a history-making speech. That is, that's a pretty high bar to reach for a commencement speaker, but Marshall did it in 47 when he announced the Marshall Plan, that the U.S. committed itself to the rebuilding of Europe. And Kennedy, in the American University speech, really moderated his, as Ted said, his tough Cold Warrior stance, and talked about the importance of achieving not merely peace in our time, as he said, but peace for all time. So this peace speech was really a change, a shift in tone for Kennedy, and very, very powerful and very much influenced by his experience in the Cuban Missile Crisis in the year that he had endured between 62 and 63.
All right. Let's get a few more calls into this show. Kevin from Middleborough, Mass. Is calling. Hey, Kevin, you're on the air. It's good to have you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, I graduated from the University of Michigan in 1981.
Go Blue!
And, absolutely. We have the good or bad fortune to draw Harold Shapiro, the president of the university, as a commencement speaker.
Huh.
And he called us all narcissistic leftovers of the 60s.
Thanks. I needed that.
Narcissistic leftovers of the 1960s. So Kevin, thank you for that. I want to move on and get... Yeah, go ahead, Ted. I'm just saying...
Well, it's such a diss in so many ways. It's yeah. Insulting the 60s, but they're not really even part of the 60s.
Yeah, really. Let's go to Beth from Lexington, Mass. Go ahead, Beth. You're on the air.
Hi. I graduated in 1976 from Simmons College right here in Boston, and I could not tell you for the life of me who the speaker was, but I'll always remember what she said, because Simmons had a very well-respected library science school, very well regarded in the country, and a nursing program. And during the course of the speech, the commencement speaker said, and now women don't have to settle for being nurses and librarians anymore.
Wow. Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Whoops.
Yeah.
There were so many boos in that audience.
Yeah. So, Beth, thanks so much for that anecdote. Boy, Ellen and Ted, I guess the message there is maybe know just a little something about your audience.
Yeah, might do a little research.
That's amazing.
And librarians and nurses are fantastic people. I want to add that, too. I'm a former librarian.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad you added that, Ted. Let's listen to another example. 2005, Kenyon College author David Foster Wallace gave the commencement address. Here's a little bit of what he said.
As I'm sure you guys know by now, it is extremely difficult to stay alert and attentive instead of getting hypnotized by the constant monologue inside your own head. Maybe happening right now. 20 years after my own graduation, I have come gradually to understand that the liberal arts cliche about teaching you how to think is actually shorthand for a much deeper, more serious idea. Learning how to think really means learning how to exercise some control over how and what you think. It means being conscious and aware enough to choose what you pay attention to and to choose how you construct meaning from experience.
All right. That was David Foster Wallace in 2005. I'll start with you, Ted. Is that on your list of one of the better commencement addresses? Yeah,
it is. It's a kind of recent example of a speech that crosses over and becomes something important on the internet and then something else when it became a book. And it basically became the last bit of writing we got from David Wallace. He committed suicide, and he even in an uncomfortable moment in that speech talks about why people sometimes kill themselves. And that bit was later cut out of a lot of versions of the speech that appeared later. But it's a big sprawling meditation on our times, and it's filled with beautiful writing and sadness, but also the glimmer of hope that you expect from a commencement speech, although a little more sadness and a smaller amount of hope than you might usually get, but still enough to be satisfying.
Right. Ellen, are there trends about of commencement speeches lately? In other words, are we seeing trends in commencement speeches that we wouldn't have been seeing decades ago?
I guess the difference is that now the speakers are much more diverse than we would have seen many, many years ago. I think, going back to the 50s, the 60s, perhaps the 70s even, you tended to see, important political figures, usually men giving these speeches, often, I suppose, white men. And we have many, many more diverse people and people from many, many more diverse professions who are now invited to give these commencement speeches. And I suppose in our media-saturated world, you now see, often you'll see news personalities that are being invited, and I think that's probably a more recent trend. Always exciting for the students to see artists, musicians, right, actors.
Ellen Fitzpatrick, we're going to jump in there because we're up against the clock. She's a professor of history at the University of New Hampshire. Her latest book, The Highest Glass Ceiling, Women's Quest for the American Presidency. Ellen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And Ted Widmer, historian and writer. He was a speechwriter in the Clinton White House from 1997 to 2001. He also edited the Library of America's American Speeches. Ted, great pleasure having you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Anthony.
Have a great weekend.
To you. Yep.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. This is Radio Boston.